Kuroko Book Club. Today we're going to start on Chapter 2 of The Hero with a Thousand Faces by Joseph Campbell. And I say start on Chapter 2 because I didn't get all the way through it with my notes. So there's that. And I also haven't finished getting it edited up for the website either. But I wanted to record an episode today anyway, and I figured we might as well get started on Chapter 2. It is a large chapter if you've been following along. I'm not sure. Let me see. It's probably 60, 70 pages in the hardcover book that I'm reading from. Let me see. Yeah, it's something like that. It's one of the bigger chapters in the book. In fact, by the time we finish Chapter 2, we'll be almost halfway through the book. And then the chapters following will be successively smaller. We may cover a couple of chapters at a time, in fact. So I don't feel too bad about splitting this up into two episodes. But Chapter 2 is called The Road of Trials. And this is the iconic moment of the hero journey. The Road of Trials, it's where the hero is tested. And it's where the hero develops into the hero. Because before the Road of Trials, the hero is still developing as a character or as an archetypal figure. And so I wanted to start this section off with a quote from Jung, or actually a couple of quotes from Carl Jung. And the first is one that you may already know. It's, "Beware of unearned wisdom." It's a simple little quote, but it's deep in meaning. And I believe he was talking about wisdom gained through the ingestion of certain chemicals, like hallucinogenics and so on. But beware of that unearned wisdom, because that's accessing that world of dreams that that normally should come naturally. And it's accessing parts of your brain that, sort of through a method of force. And that's what that singular quote. And reading this chapter, which I've read through the whole chapter, I just haven't I haven't made the notes for it yet. But that singular quote, it kind of sums it all up in my mind. It sums up the whole hero journey, because wisdom is gained through trials in all of mythology, in all of life, really. And I'll illustrate this a little bit. So, in Norse mythology, you have Odin. Odin is kind of the all-father, or not kind of, he is the all-father. He's the father of all. He is you might even consider him the king of the gods if you want to be very simplistic about it. But Odin, he goes through a series of trials to gain wisdom and to gain knowledge. He wants to know the runes, and to know the runes is to know wisdom itself. And he's considered the wisest of all the gods of the north. And you have to give up, you have to sacrifice for this wisdom. And this is a common trope in all of mythology, is sacrifice. Sacrifice for wisdom, sacrifice for strength, sacrifice for that which gives you the power to move forward with your story. And I think of all of these things, at least in my mind, as my own story, the story of my life. And what kind of sacrifices do you have to make to move your story forward? What kind of heroic trials do you have to go through to move it forward? And I want to focus, with that in mind, I do want to focus on the sort of the end result, although we're not there yet in the Hero with a Thousand Faces. But the goal. The goal of the hero is to be victorious over whoever the... Oh, and you hear my cat now. She's... There she is. Okay. The goal of the hero is to... where was I? Now Leia, my cat, has distracted me. The goal of the hero is to seek some sort of an end that is beneficial to the hero and the hero's people. The people, or the tribe of the hero, as it were. And so, for instance, Odin... He sought wisdom. He sought knowledge. And that was for him. But it was also so that he could benefit the Aesir, or the heroes of Asgard, as it were. And so what he had to give up, the sacrifice that he had to make, was first, He went to Mimir's well, and he plucked out his eye and tossed it into the well. That was the price he had to pay for the ability to see all, to be all-seeing in the ways of wisdom and knowledge. But then more, he wanted to know the runes and the magic of the runes. And to really understand that, you have to understand the very concept of the runes. The runes are not just symbols, and the idea of magic is not just something that, it's not something where it's just this magical thing that you do to get something that you want. No, in Norse mythology, the magic was always to aid the hero, or aid the protagonist, in their journey. It's nothing to be taken lightly, it's nothing to be used flippantly. And Odin understood this, because he gave his eye. But then he learned the runes by, it's a common theme throughout mythology. He hung in a tree for 9 days, by the neck. And I say common theme, it's a common theme for mythology because it's the symbol of the tree, or the rood, as it were, and the hero hanging in the rood, or upon the rood, upon the tree, within the tree. You have the figure of Jesus hanging from the timbers, and you have the figure of Odin hanging by the neck from the tree for 9 days, staring at the runes. And through that trial, he learned the runes, and he absorbed the runes into him. And of course, with the figure of Jesus, he hung on the timbers of the cross, and then he was buried away and rose again to bring a promise of life. And these things can all be, these are all stories of wisdom that is earned through trials. Even the story of Christ is wisdom earned through trial, although he has a bit of an unfair advantage, his particular story, but he still has to go through the trials to reach that ascension, to ascend from death. And even now with the Odin story, he faces these things without fear, because that is part of the culture around the Teutonic myths. With Jesus' story, he faces these trials, and before he is shaken with fear. But then he casts off this fear and goes and faces the trials anyway. And I hope you're starting to see how this relates to your own story, because if you should see your life as a story. You wake up in the morning and it's another chance to progress your story. You wake up in the morning and it's another chance to face a new trial through which you may gain wisdom and by which you may progress towards ascension of some sort. Now, I'm not speaking of like a mystical ascension of the spirit and all that, but I sort of am at the same time. And maybe the thought has entered your head just now as it has mine. What does this have anything? How does this have anything to do with anarchism or anarchy? And I think I've described this before, but I think all matters that are human, all matters of the mind and philosophy and the soul, if you want to call it that, have to do with anarchy. Because all anarchy is a human saying that I will have no master, saying that no one will exert force over me, and the trials that I must face to achieve that. Because right now, I don't care where you are in the world, there is someone exerting some sort of force over you. It may be the massive corporation that you're working for. It may be your government. It may be both. It may be your parents exerting a destructive force over you. Because that's... Do not be mistaken in thinking that the hero is just trying to defeat this idea of force or of oppression. Because those ideas are meaningless. It's the hero is trying to fight off something that is... The hero is trying to achieve something, I should say. The hero is trying to achieve a level higher for him or herself, but also a level higher for those around him or her. And so whenever I say we're fighting off this external force, this external oppression, if you think of it in simplistic terms like that, then you may be able to delude yourself into thinking that it's a simple fight, but it's not. Because every day you wake up and what do? Hopefully, you wake up and I shower in the evening. So I wake up and I'll brush my teeth while the coffee is brewing. I'll read some news or some articles of, generally I'll find them on the Fediverse, on Mastodon. And then I'll get ready for the workday. And what is my work? I finally found a job that seems worthwhile to me. And this is to me, of course. It's in IT. And so I get ready for my workday. And then I go to work. And I do my work. And all the while I'm thinking of what other things I can do to progress my own knowledge. For instance, at work, whenever I have downtime, I'll putter around and, you know, just kind of scroll through the timeline for whatever. But for this podcast, and this is the whole reason I started this podcast, or Ogcast, as it were, was because it helps motivate me to continue reading more and continue gaining more wisdom of some sort. And that's the whole point of this. I mean, this is all for me, but it's also for you, the listener. Because what's the point? Well, no, because there is a point, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. There is a point to doing it, even if no one's listening. And I know there's at least one or two people listening. And so there's a point to it for me, and that's why I'm doing it. But I record it, and I publish it, because maybe it can help someone else think through some difficult idea. Or maybe it can help somebody sort of think about things differently than they do. And that's the whole point of a heroic journey. Whenever we think of a hero, we think of this sort of godlike figure. And you may be possibly made fun of for considering yourself the hero in a story. But the truth is, you're the hero of your own story because that's all that you can control. You can't control the forces around you. You can't control the outside influences. And you may think you can. There's an illusion of control in a statist government. There's an illusion of control that if you get, say, elected as, I don't know, governor or mayor or even president, that you have some sort of control over people. The only thing you have if you get elected or appointed, the only thing that you have is oppressive force. That's it. That's not the same thing as control. Whenever Donald Trump got elected, did you see him controlling people? Now you may say, sure, he controlled people. He controlled the military. He controlled the Border Patrol agents. But he didn't control them. What he did was he directed them and used governmental force to bend them to his will. Whenever Biden was elected, do you think anything he does controls anyone other than himself? No. No. He doesn't control anyone but himself. But he suffers this delusion of control. And in a way, I guess he is controlling. He is controlling through force. But that's a false control. Now sure, it affects you, and it affects me. What he does, what Trump did, what Obama did, what Bush did, what all of these men, these great men of power as they are perceived, what all of them have done is perceived as control. And they do have a certain amount of leverage. They can use the force of government, the force of the gun, to exert their will upon you. But in the end, you control your own life in one way or another. And that's the hero's journey. You are the hero of your own story. And you will face the road of trials. And this is what Campbell lays out for us. And he's speaking to it as the greater myth. But also I think he's speaking to it as how the reason these myths were created. The reason these myths were not created, but perceived. Because they are true in the fact that they are something that is perceived by the mind's eye. And perhaps someone dreamt these myths, and then someone wrote them down, or they started telling each other these myths. And what you get is, it's an earned sort of wisdom. Because this wisdom was earned by those that dreamed. Because those dreams were influenced by the actions that took place, or the activities, the events that shaped the dreamer. And that's what Campbell's talking about here. Another quote from Jung is, "Knowing your own darkness is the best method for dealing with the darkness of other people." And that helps contribute to the story of the hero. It helps contribute because the story of the hero is one where the hero comes to terms with his own darkness, the own darkness that lies deep within him or her. They confront it, and then they use it to understand the darkness of those around them, to understand the darkness of their adversary. When Odin faced off with the mighty wolf Fenrir at the end of times, Odin knew his own darkness. He hung from a tree for 9 days, realizing his own darkness. And so he was able to perceive the darkness of the wolf, the great wolf Fenrir. And he's able to face off against the great wolf Fenrir. But in the end, of course, at least according to the Teutonic myths, darkness does win. Darkness extinguishes the light. But then what's born afterwards, there is a rebirth that takes place. And out of the full consumption of darkness springs forth life, and the story begins again. And this is the path of the hero. We will sum up with one more quote from Jung, because a lot of what Campbell is speaking about in this book, in this specific chapter, comes from the teachings of Jung, Carl Jung, or actually, maybe not the teachings, but the observations of Jung. And the last quote is short. "I am what I choose to become." That is the motto of the hero. I am what I choose to become. And in the past, people had myths to rely on. And today we still do. And we create our own myths. We spin our own realities. But something that Campbell said really struck me, just in the beginning of this chapter. He said, "This is our problem as modern, enlightened individuals, for whom all gods and devils have been rationalized out of existence. The problem is," this is me again, "the problem is that we don't have these myths that we can hold on to and understand the world through someone else's earned wisdom. I mean, we have it, sure, but a lot of it has been rationalized out of existence," as Campbell puts it. And so we are a nation or a people or a society searching for a new myth, as it were. And maybe that's not how we see it. That's not how we perceive it. But that's what's happening. We're looking for something to guide us, something to give us the wisdom. And something that I have perceived at whenever I look out upon the scape of humanity is that a lot of people want to earn that wisdom without the trials. They want to stay home in the comfort of their enclosures, with the comfort of the things around them, or with the comfort of the screen in front of them, and they want to still earn that wisdom. That's part of the reason why I think people like Jordan Peterson were so popular, because a lot of people see that and they latch onto it. They understand, and this is actually what he was speaking about, at least in the speeches that I've heard from him. Not speeches, I listened to his, where he goes through the beginning books of the Bible and kind of explains the mythology behind it. And the things that he was talking about there really struck a chord with me, because, and I think it did with a lot of people, and maybe it's not just that, but from that he moved on and began speaking worldwide about things, and it struck a chord with a lot of people because they saw the power of myth, as Joseph Campbell would put it. And they wanted that knowledge, they wanted that wisdom for themselves. They were hungry for it, in fact. But so many of the people that I know that have latched on to the philosophies of Peterson, they're content with simply reading his book and simply listening to him talk, and they're content with that. They're not actually going out to face the trials. They're not actually facing off against their adversaries. And again, we have to ask ourselves, what does this have to do with anarchy? We have our own trials, you see. And you can't fix a house, or you can't fix a household. You can't fix your community until you fix yourself first. You have to go through the trials as the hero of your own story. And if each of us become the hero of our own story, and we face our trials, and we face off against our adversaries in a respectable manner, then we don't have to change society, because society will change. It will shape around the changes we make in ourselves. Your partner will change if you change, or they won't, and they won't be your partner anymore. Your family will change with you. They may not change to the extent that you change internally, but they will change, and they will follow the hero, if a hero is what you are becoming. And a lot of people look out upon society and they say, ah, society's totally messed up. This is the end. And that may be true. Historically, societies reach a peak and then they start their long and painful journey downwards into what I describe as the Ragnarok, or the end of times for a society. Because it truly is an end of times for, say, the United States, the society of the United States. And there's nothing, no way to avoid the ultimate destruction that comes from the Ragnarok and the fall of society. The rise and fall of the Roman Empire. The rise and fall of Germany. The rise and fall of every great nation on Earth, or every great society, that is, on the face of the Earth. It's always the same pattern, and it's cyclical. Just like the story of the Ragnarok, or the story of the Völuspá, of Teutonic myth, which I strongly encourage anyone to read. Simply the Völuspá. You don't have to read the entire Poetic Edda to get the meat of the story. But let's move on, because section 2 of chapter 2 is called Meeting with the Goddess. Because after the trials, in most mythologies, the hero meets with the goddess. Many times the hero will marry the goddess, or will be joined to the goddess somehow. And this is the rest after the trials, before the great fight. This is where the hero finds a small amount of humanity and all of the evil that he or she, in some cases, have endured through their trials. But this is also where the trials are just beginning. This is where you, the hero... Well, then let's take the example from last week, the pothole in your neighborhood. You have to go through all of these trials, and oftentimes you're suffering through these trials, and if you don't already have someone to rely on, you meet someone who can partner with you and help you through these trials. This is the meeting of the goddess. Now, it could be, it doesn't have to be a sexual relationship, but the philosophy behind the myth is someone, the whole concept of meeting and marrying with the goddess is this concept of finding someone to bond with strongly so that you're joined in the fight. In the Teutonic myth of Brunhilde and Sigurd in, what was it? Well, the myth of Brunhilde. She was made to go to sleep, enclosed in a tower of shields. This is also the Sleeping Beauty story from Disney. Enclosed in a tower of shields, shining bright, and Sigurd goes and mounts the hill, and he breaks down the shields and wakes up the great warrior, Brunhilde. And then they fight the dragon together. He's found his goddess, Sigurd has. And then they face off against the adversary together. And this is the concept, in my mind, at least in my perception, this is the concept of a mutual aid. You want to fill that pothole in your neighborhood. But you're meeting so much resistance, so many trials, so many tribulations. And then you meet someone who can help you. And together, through more trial and more tribulation, perhaps you achieve the goal and you get that pothole filled. But now you have a bond with this person, and say they're your neighbor, and now every time you see them, you know this is the person that stood by you. This is the goddess of myth. And perhaps it's not that sort of relationship like in myth, but it is similar. Because now you're bonded through a struggle. The same with men who went and fought in World War II. And women who were nurses then as well. They fought together against a perceived enemy. And let's lay aside any arguments against or for the war. Let's just see the capsule of the experience of a man going to fight in World War II. And they made a whole series about this on the History Channel called Band of Brothers. They fought these adversaries together. They fought with each other against the adversary. And that created a lifelong bond. And so that's the second step. And that's where we're going to end this one. We're going to end with that second step. The meeting of the goddess and the bonding with the goddess. And this is where the trials pick up. And now you're going to face the real demons. But how does this relate? I just want to recap a little bit how this relates to the struggle of the anarchist against the state, mainly, but also against anything that is also a state-like actor. Anyone who proposes to use some sort of violence or force against you to force you into doing their will, that is what an anarchist fights against. And how this helps us, it builds a myth in our own minds. And we can build, and I hope it helps you realize that you're building your own mythology, whether you like it or not. Say you went to an Antifa rally, and you're fighting against a perceived enemy, and you make friendships there, and you bond with people there, and you're facing a road of trials against a perceived enemy with your band of brothers. This is your myth. The enemy is your myth. And I hope you see that I'm using these words, this word myth, not as this is your falsehood, but as this is the story of your life. This is your hero journey. Say you don't go to an Antifa meeting. Say you stay at home while it's happening, and you say hurrah to them. They're doing great work. Or it doesn't have to be Antifa. That's just the one I know best. A Black Lives Matter rally or protest. Instead, you stay home and you tweet or you toot on the Fediverse about it. Your support. If that's the most that your heroic spirit can muster, then okay, that's fine. But you never you. I think you should really look inside yourself and see what is the hero journey that you want to see. And there you come to the famous quote from Gandhi, be the change you want to see in the world. People have used that so much it's lost its meaning, I think. Because maybe you should really look inside yourself, look for the hero, and become the hero. Even if it's just fixing a pothole, you see. Because that is a heroic act. Banding together, fighting an adversary, and getting something done that betters the world. And throwing off the chains, because that's what you have to fight. For that pothole to be filled, you have to fight against an insidious evil, and that is government. You have to fight against a foe that is called corporate power, that tries, it attempts to reach up with its hooks and drag you down to the depths of hell where it exists. But you must give your eye to the well of Mimir. You must hang in the tree for 9 days to seek the wisdom, to become the hero. And this is your transformation journey. This is your, if you remember from before, your metamorphosis. I don't remember which episode that was, but many episodes ago we covered metamorphosis. This is the changing of the individual into the hero. And you don't have to be, and here's the secret, you don't have to be a hero for anyone but yourself. That is anarchism. An anarchist is a hero to themselves, and that's it. Because you can get something done to better your own life. And in doing so, it will better the society around you, regardless of what you think. You may think that you have to get involved in, and this has really been bugging me lately. I've been listening to the Libertarians, because they're one of the only, well, that's who makes most of the podcasts out there that I can find, that are even decent to listen to. And they all talk about this guy, Dave Smith, who is, I guess he's considering running for president under the Libertarian flag. And that's great, I guess. I mean, if that's the hero journey he wants to choose, that's great. But if you seek the destructive power of government and the destructive power of force against others, then in the end, I don't know what you're contributing to society. If you think that you can roll back the crimes of government, if you think you can unkill the natives of the Americas, if you think you can unkill the slaves, if you think you can unslave the slaves of the 1800s and 1700s and 1600s and even the 1900s and even into today, if you think you can undo the actions, the deeds, then I think you got another thing coming, see. If you think you can grab a hold of the ring of power, to use a Tolkien metaphor, and use it for good, the very act of holding the ring is an evil act. The very act of exerting force against others, the very act of existing as a force to bend others to your will, regardless of the pain that you put them through, of the struggle that you place upon them, the very act of taking the ring is an act of evil and an act of violence. So if you seek that, then go ahead. But if you think that's going to change society in any way, other than just to deepen the evil that already exists, then I think you need to step back and take a second look at yourself. Look at your hero journey. Have you faced the road of trials? Are you existing on the wisdom of others that is unearned? That's what you have to ask yourself. And that's what I want to close this whole thing up with. And we'll finish chapter 2 next week. But this one, the beginning of chapter 2 really struck me. That's part of the reason why it took me so long to get through it and to really take down notes, was it just really struck me. And I just wanted to take a moment to talk about all of that. And, of course, hear feedback from you guys. So we'll stop it there. If you have any comments, any thoughts, any rebuttals, if you have anything for me, feel free to reach out on Mastodon or email me. I'll put the links in the the show notes. Feel free to reach out. I'm also on Briar, a privacy messaging app. I'm looking into getting, there's one called, I can't remember what it's called. It's a Bitcoin Lightning Network-based chat thing. Sphinx Chat, that's what it is. But I don't know how I feel about it yet. It's a really neat idea, at least. But I'm testing that out still. So reach out to me. You can also find me, if you want, on XMPP or Jabber Chat, if you want to chat with me. I don't know what you call it, username or whatever on that is @harag@trashserver.net. If you already have an XMPP account, you can do that. I'll put that in the notes as well, but it's not something I'm really pushing. Just reach out, tell me what you think. I hope you enjoyed this segment of our study of Campbell and the Hero with 1,000 Faces. And if you did, let me know. If you didn't, let me know. So that's it. And next week we're going to finish up chapter 2 and hopefully we can get started into chapter 3. But we'll see. We'll see where it takes us. So with that, I will bid you all a good day.